shoot, they score!
Score!
We have
put the shot, it's score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think it's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme? He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Draws one. Here's a partial break to Foley on a two-on-one down the right wing boards. Winds up, doesn't shoot. Now he moves it out in front. A shot, they score! On the far side, Milan Lucic went toward the net. The fake shot by Toffoli froze everybody. Then he slid it over the far side post. And it's just a redirect from the blue ice in for Lucic. And it's 2-1 Los Angeles.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. That from last night's Winnipeg Jets Los Angeles Kings game. A 4-1 victory for the Kings. Of course, two of those four goals coming with the Jets net empty, as it was a 2-1 Kings win if you take away those empty net goals, and a 1-1 game up until about the 55-minute mark, where Tyler Toffoli or Milan Lucic, still some discrepancy, I guess, as to who officially scored the goal. But in any event, the LA Kings victorious last night at MTS Center by a 2-1 margin over the Winnipeg Jets. We say good evening. I say good evening to my colleagues. Gentlemen, you're both looking fine and dandy on this Wednesday evening. A disappointing loss for the Jets last night in that, you know, when it's 1-1 and there's 50, you know, you've played 55 minutes of the game, at the very least you're hoping to send it over into the overtime to earn at least 1 point. But it was not meant to be for the Winnipeg Jets last night.
Yeah, Drew, I mean, I thought overall the Jets played a solid game. I don't think they played a particularly great game. I don't think they played particularly poorly. I mean, that's a 1-1 game going into the middle of the third period there, or the end, near the end of the third period. And the one thing I'd say about the game in general was that LA played their game more so than the Jets played theirs. And you kind of heard that in Paul Maurice's post-game comments. So you give credit to the, you know, the veteran squad that's been there before for being able to dictate the pace. The only thing I'd say about the Jets' comments after is, I mean, to me, you don't have to really defer to this LA Kings team. I don't think this LA Kings team is that good. And I'm not saying they're a bad team. I haven't going to the playoffs, but I don't think they're that good. And I think the Jets are certainly on the same level as them, and certainly in the same ballpark. So if I'm a Jets fan, I want them to be a little bit more angry about it, losing a game like that, a close game, 1-1 with the mistakes near the end. But overall, I mean, there's lots for Paul Maurice to work with there, and those are kind of good games for a coach, as he almost, because you lose, so you can get your message across, but you weren't poor in that many areas, so you don't have the players losing any confidence.
And Rich, you mentioned that you thought that the Kings played their game more than the Jets played theirs, and I agree 100%, and I think that was really evident in the third period, because through the first two periods of that game, the Jets were the better team. And I'm not talking about shots on goal or shots directed in the net. I'm talking about just the way they played, and they outskated LA. They're a faster team.
They're definitely a faster team.
And I think, you know, Jonathan Quick made a few good saves. Nikolai Ehlers hits a crossbar in the first period there. The save that really was the most impressive to me was when Tyler Myers jumped into the play and Jonathan Quick made a really nice pad save there. There was an initial shot and then Tyler Myers drove to the net. But I think, you know, one of those goals goes in, that game might be over, because I think for the most part, Andre Pavlik was very solid in net. And you mentioned, Drew, two of the goals were empty netters, so it was really a 3-1 game, if you think about it.
2-1, you mean?
Meaning the fourth goal was right. Meaningless, more so. So, you know, you look at these two teams, and this is certainly not the LA team that won the Stanley Cup two years ago. Yep. I agree with Rich. You know, I picked the Kings to make the playoffs. I still think that they're going to be in contention. We'll see what happens. There's still 5 months to go here, Drew. But the point being that you look at the defense, it's not the same. I think at times Ehlers-Shifley-Perreault line was able to penetrate the offensive zone with ease, and they generated a lot of good scoring chances. I thought the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line wasn't their best game. But I thought as a whole, the Jets were able to dictate the pace, but it slowed down a little bit. And I think Milan Lucic, guys, you know, talking to the media after the game and the way he's interacting with his teammates, this is the perfect guy for that LA Kings team. They still like to play that heavy style, and Lucic isn't the fastest guy, but they have a lot of other guys that can play like that. Dustin Brown likes to still mix it up, and he's lost a step, but that's how they're still trying to play. And I think if the Kings pick up, you know, one or two players, I think they could really turn their team around, just like they did when they picked up Gabarek a couple of years ago when they won the Cup. But Marian Gabarek, I mean, he was MIA last night. He didn't do much. But that was a game that the Jets should have won, really. And I don't think you're too upset if you're Paul Maurice, because even though you didn't get the 2 points, there's not much that you didn't like about how you played. Maybe you didn't generate enough offense. And sure, you missed coverages, especially on the Lucic goal when Myers, you know, overcommitted a little bit.
Yeah, but I think Wheeler also has to rub out the Lucic on that play, getting his way a little bit. So I thought Myers, you can take issue with Myers' read there. And remember, he's on the wrong side.
Yep.
On a set faceoff play, playing lower than usual,
setting up for the for what they hope to be a one timer.
Yeah,
is
which
that
is
right?
Common. Yeah, lots of teams will set up a play. And LA, as his post game interviews says, the LA alluded to having a set play too there. So they both had set plays. But the point is, Wheeler is supposed to at least get in the way a little bit of Lucic. So again, nitpicking, but don't just throw Myers completely under the bus. Every player's play on the ice is generally dictated by his teammate. So and as he talked about creating chances with the Ehlers line, Ehlers, Scheifele and Perreault, Paul Maurice and his coaching staff, Pascal Vincent and Charlie Heidi, made a concerted effort to get that line out against LA's third pairing of Aerhoff and McBain, a terrible defensive pairing. And they did a great job of that. So give the bench credit there for giving that team, that line, an opportunity. Now, it happens to be the goal that they scored was against the Doughty pairing. Coincident, you know,
sure.
Funny enough, right?
Which wasn't a very good goal to begin with.
Right, but you put the puck on net. But the point is, Drew, is, you know, when we're judging, and I agree, you know, Little's line has had better games. But remember, when we're judging it, take into account one line's playing a lot against Doughty, one line's playing a lot against Aerhoff. Big difference.
Yeah, and the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line, I wouldn't say was particularly bad. It just wasn't particularly great either. And Blake Wheeler was still good, and, you know, unfortunately his point streak is snapped, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he had a point in all 8 games. And for me, Blake Wheeler, aside from Nikolai Ehlers and Mark Scheifele, has been the Jets' most consistent forward.
It's a weird point streak, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, I've seen him play better for longer periods of time, for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, not every single one of those points was necessarily
but for
a
guy,
goal.
Sorry for interrupting, Ezzy, but for a guy who goes through peaks and valleys oftentimes, if you saw Blake Wheeler play at this level for all 82 games, you would be okay with that.
Well, he's been their most consistent forward for, I would say, the last 3 years. So, I think you don't want to just look at points. I think you want to look at how he plays at both ends of the ice, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
And he's their most skilled forward, and he's their most consistent forward. But, again, you like how the goaltending was. They didn't take too many bad penalties. I actually thought Alexander Burmistrov had one of his strongest games of the year after coming off a game in which he took that bad penalty.
The elbow.
Which allowed Minnesota to get back into the game, and then he was subsequently fined. I thought Burmy was really good at both ends of the ice, and he's usually good at both ends of the ice, but I thought he was more noticeable. I think in some of the games at home, he hasn't even been noticeable. So, again, you know, the Jets are sitting pretty right now at 5-3-1. But, again, you'd like to have those couple of points, or at the very least get 1 point, because the entire Central Division, with the exception of really the Colorado Avalanche, who can't seem to buy a win, every single team, all 6 teams that I mentioned, with the exception of Colorado, are picking up points. So
is that going to stop? I don't think it's going to stop.
5-3-1, you just mentioned it. 5-3-1, most Jets fans would say they're probably happy. Inside the organization, they'd probably say they're decently pleased with that start. 6th place in the Central Division at 5-3-1.
And if they beat Chicago, they're 6-3-1.
Yeah.
And as Rick Ralph has mentioned a lot, and I bet he mentioned it with Richie on the postgame show and last night, the Jets have been 4-5-1 to start the last 3 years.
Sure.
So if you're 6-3-1, I mean,
progress.
That's a lot of progress. And then you're setting yourself up very nicely for a tough road trip coming up where you've got 2 back-to-backs.
It's amazing how vicious the Central Division is. I mean, that's the only word that really comes to mind, is how vicious it is, with the exception of the Colorado Avalanche, who are a bad hockey team and have continued to be a bad hockey team for over a year now.
Well, they have their coach and players saying different things, too, which is never a good thing.
Well, and you wonder how long the leash is for Patrick Waugh there, but he's got such power and personnel power, it's a bad situation in Colorado. But you look at the Central Division, everybody's well above 500, and any which way you calculate 500 as a points percentage or a winning percentage, they're above 500. You cannot have losing streaks in the Central Division.
The Central Division is the best division in hockey, and it's not close. And I think you're going to need 100 points again to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You might need 102 points the way it's going. And you know, you're right, Drew, and that's why it's unfortunate that they haven't picked up as many points as they would like here. You know, you are able to avoid Minnesota coming back, but you know, unfortunately, you lose to Tampa Bay in overtime. You lose a point there. You lost to St. Louis. So tomorrow's game is huge. And going up against Columbus and Montreal back-to-back on the road, Columbus beat New Jersey last night. Even though they're not a very good team right now, they're still trying to find themselves.
First home game under John Tortorella on Saturday as well.
But the schedule is so odd in terms of the style of teams that they're playing. They go Tampa Bay, quick, skilled. St. Louis, no, they're not skilled, really physical. You know, and then you go to Minnesota. More skilled, certainly not physical. Then you go L.A., really physical. Then you go Chicago, really skilled. Then you go Columbus, really physical. Then you go Montreal, really. It's hard to get into a routine when you're playing teams that are just so different night after night.
And the irony of that comment, Richie, there's so few teams that are that physical. It's odd that the Jets are seeing really the only three especially physical teams in the league. You're seeing them within that sort of five-game span like you just mentioned. It is an odd scheduling quirk. Also, having two back-to-backs like they have coming up, that's a little bit odd as well. But, you know, c'est la vie when it comes to the scheduling.
And that's the issue that we talked about. Richie specifically mentioned before the season started, the contrast of styles, right? The Jets have lost a little bit of that physical edge. They still have many players who can play that physical style of hockey, like Dustin Byfuglien, Mark Stewart, Adam Lowry. I mean, there are other players that can mix it up. They've had trouble with the heavier teams, St. Louis, mm-hmm. L.A., and they've actually done better against skilled teams. And they've done pretty well against teams like Tampa Bay mm-hmm. and Dallas. Just talking about the last year and a half or so, since Paul Maurice took over, because obviously there was a bit of a change in structure and systems and all that. But the Jets have a game coming up against a team who, although they're missing Mr. Conn Smythe, they haven't really lost a step. Chicago's still playing very well.
Duncan Keith, of course, is
scoring as many goals as they'd like, but they're also not letting in many goals, winning those two games back-to-back, 1-0 in overtime.
All right, and we'll talk about the Blackhawks next segment. One thing, you know, we talked about this on Saturday, how the Jets are sort of transitioning their lineup from being the physical team that they were last year to a more of a skilled team this year. And I wonder if, you know, that transition, which is still ongoing because you're still early in the year here, might play into factor into how the Jets aren't able to sort of close out these last couple games against St. Louis and the Kings when it's a tie game late into the third period.
We said early in the season on the show, as you just mentioned it. The question is now is not can they score. They're a skilled team. They have talent enough to be able to create chances and score goals. The question is can they defend? That's the question. And so far, I think the answer is no, consistently at a high level. I don't think they can. I think they can score consistently at a high level so far. And I've been very pleased with that. If you're a Jets fan, you should be very pleased with that. I've been pleased with that as an observer in terms of, you know, wanting to see some creative play, playmaking, different style than last year. That's, to me, is more exciting hockey. Now, having said that, it's very hard to do both. And right now, the Jets are having trouble defending. And defense is such a team effort, right, guys? And it's easier to defend the way they were playing last year than the way they're playing this year. Well, why is that? Because you try things at the red line, you try things at the blue opposition's blue line, you're trying to make plays. And I think at the end of the day, you need to be able to do that to win in the league. So I think it's a good transition for the squad, but there's going to be some growing pains here.
You look back at the playoffs last year, where you had, you know, Chicago and Anaheim, two very skilled teams, and neither team could really defend a lead. So I think that goes to your point to some extent, Richard, is that it's very difficult for teams to be offensively minded and able to defend a lead at the exact same time.
Well, it depends on the team.
Sure. Of course, it depends on the team, but it doesn't seem like you can be 100% at both.
You probably can't. I mean, if you're going to be exceptionally gifted offensively, you're going to take some chances. It's going to give it another way in the back end. That's fair. But I think also the Jets' defense is really good in terms of transition. Defensively, at times they lack in terms of their ability to you know, well, they take off, they take chances for sure up the ice, and that'll cost you. But every team in the league sends their defense now to pinch. I think just the defensive reads in their own zone, the coaching staff would probably like it to be better. And you're naive if you think that the defense is just the sixth defenseman. It's the forwards, and it's playing a huge a team and a style of play. And again, last year, Ezzy, it's easier. I'm going to go to break here, but it's easier. You throw the puck in deep. You forecheck two guys. You hang your other guy high who covers for the defenseman if he pinches on the weak side. You have a bunch of big bodies. You can skate pretty well, and it's hard to get back up the ice. Look at it. Look at LA yesterday, for example. It was impossible. Once they had the lead, I know it was the last part of the game. Once they had the lead, you try and get in the middle. It's impossible.
Yeah.
This team is different, right? And this team is different. And again, I think it's a good transition, but there are going to be growing pains.
And Richie, I think with the exception of the 4-1 win at MSG over the Rangers, I think the Jets have failed to really shut down a game when they've had the lead. Yeah. And they've gone back and forth. And I think the best example was the game against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I think, to Richie's point, I think the coaching staff is definitely going to be looking at tightening up defensively and having that balance, reaching that balance where you're able to pick your spots and the D is able to jump up into the play and you're able to generate offense, but not at the expense of defense and having odd man rushes coming the other way like we saw on, you know, Lucic and Toffoli's goal.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about tomorrow evening against the Chicago Blackhawks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Blake Wheeler scoring against the Chicago Blackhawks last season. The Winnipeg Jets, a fair bit of success against the Stanley Cup champions during the 2014-15 regular season. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. The Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. at MTS Center. A game, of course, you can hear on TSN 1290. Blackhawks won four games in a row in some of the more unusual factor or manner in which to do so. They haven't scored a regulation goal in 139 minutes and 43 seconds since the 17-second mark of a game against the Florida Panthers. Yet somehow, they're 3-0 in those last three games, and they've won their last two games 1-0 in overtime. This is a team, I think, a little snake bit offensively right now. They really are missing Duncan Keith. If you watch them, the transition game, which is their specialty, isn't what, you know, as you'd expect. Without Duncan Keith in the lineup, they're having some trouble getting the puck up to their skilled forwards.
Yeah, they're having some trouble right now scoring goals, Drew, but they're getting the wins, and you know, they're still managing to keep up the points in that central division. You know, when you have a player like Duncan Keith, we talked about this on Saturday's show, you're not going to replace Duncan Keith. You're just not going to do it. So what you have to do is replace those minutes, just like any other team. If you're talking, if it's Nashville with Shea Weber, if it's Minnesota with Ryan Suter, or if it's here in Winnipeg with Tyler Myers. Now, you mentioned the transition game. Duncan Keith has that ability to go end-to-end if he needs to, or at the very least, he has the ability to go blue line to blue line. So that slows them down a little bit. But it's interesting with the Chicago Blackhawks team because, as we know, there's been a lot of turnover. And especially amongst the forwards. You know, Johnny Oduya went to Dallas and Trevor Daly's in there now. But this is a team that in the playoffs only used four defensemen. Well, when you don't have Duncan Keith, you can't do that. And Brent Seabrook, I think, has done a really good job filling in for him. I think you notice how good Brent Seabrook is, Richie, when Duncan Keith isn't in the lineup. And Duncan Keith is a two-time Norris Trophy winner, and I picked him to win the Norris Trophy. That might not happen this year. Now that he's going to be out for 4 or 5 weeks. But
Todd Richards may still win the Jack Adams, though.
Yeah, Todd Richards. I think he's good. I mean, he could always get hired by another team.
I think that's what you predicted also.
That's what I say, but hired by Pittsburgh and win the...
But, when you're talking, you know, David Runblad and Trevor Riemsdyk. These guys are still establishing themselves, Richie, in the NHL. Good defensemen, especially Trevor Van Riemsdyk. I think in a small sample size last year, we saw that he has both offensive and defensive abilities. You know, of course, James Van Riemsdyk's brother, and then played a little bit in the Stanley Cup Finals. But this Chicago Blackhawks team, you know, everyone was thinking that this team was going to go into the tank after Duncan Keith went down. But it's such a veteran group. And even though, you know, they're struggling here to score some goals, they're not a pushover. And, you know, they took the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Anaheim Ducks to overtime. Really good games. And you could say, well, they're not scoring any goals. Where Anaheim's not scoring any goals right now either,
that's
right?
True,
so
that's
there's,
true.
There are a lot of teams right now early on that aren't scoring goals.
They were fortunate to, I don't know if you watched that Anaheim game, but they were fortunate to win that game against Anaheim. I mean, Anaheim controlled the play there. They dominated in that third period. Then you get to overtime. And when it's a 3-on-3, I mean, you can't take anything out of it in terms of
you know,
wins at that point. Aside from 2 points, you can't extrapolate that going forward to mean anything.
I mean, I don't know a lot about Victor Svedberg. I don't know anything about him. Never mind a lot. I know anything about him. But, you know, as he talks about Runblad, talks about Van Riemsdyk, and he obviously mentions Seabrook, and then you have Chalmerson and Daly. There's one key, Svedberg aside, and you know, having not seen him play, these guys move the puck. And if you're going to play a skill game, like the Hawks can, and they still have a lot of skill. Now, they have a different guys, you know, Anisimov and Panarin and Tikhonov. Different styles there, and Anisimov and Tikhonov are a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Panarin, by all accounts, is a tremendous young player who is a bargain for them and is huge. He's been a huge addition. But, you know, with that in mind, a little different mix up front, you still have Kane and Taves and all those guys, and if your defense can move the puck up to those forwards, you're going to be dangerous. And that's just what it is. I mean, your skill is high, and teams like that are able to get out of their own zone and are able to capitalize on mistakes. Now, sure, you talk about the goal-scoring drought, Drew, but when you're moving the puck and controlling the puck, you're still very hard to beat. So this team is not the team that they were last year. And let's be honest, last year in the regular season, they weren't overly difficult to play against. I mean, they'd really turn it up in the playoffs. So I don't think the Hawks are that much better than any team in the Central Division. I think they're another team in the Central Division, but when you have the winning pedigree they do, that carries a lot of weight, and I think understandably so.
If you're the Winnipeg Jets entering this game, you have to think, you have to look at it and say, look, we're catching them without Duncan Keith, and that it means it's to our advantage, and this is an opportunity. We played well against them last year during the regular season.
Absolutely.
We should take advantage of the absence of Duncan Keith.
Even with Duncan Keith, I agree with that, Drew, but even with Duncan Keith, you should be winning the game. The Jets are playing a Central Division foe. You're playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
You've been at home for a couple weeks now. You should be winning this game. Duncan Keith makes it especially important. Without him, especially important to win the game. But these are, you know, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm in a coach or in manager in this squad, I hear a little bit too much of the attitude last night of, you know, they've been there before, they've won, like about LA. Enough of that. You know, I mean, you look at every team in this league, there aren't that many good teams. You know, great teams, I should say. There are a lot of good teams. There aren't that many great teams. And so your opportunity presents itself for only a certain amount of time. I wouldn't be giving L.A. or Chicago too much credit. The L.A. and Chicago's we saw a couple years ago were far better on paper, at least, than the teams that you saw yesterday and the team you're going to see tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I disagree a little bit with you, Rich. I think Chicago is the best team in the Central Division. I do think they've taken a little bit of a step back, but I still think that they are the class of the Western Conference and the NHL. I mean, the reason for that is Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa, Brent Seabrook. I mean, you guys know all the names. Their best players are better than the Jets' best players. Not to say that the Jets can't beat the Chicago Blackhawks, but this is still a very good team with or without Duncan Keith. And I think, you know, if you're the Jets, you obviously know that Duncan Keith, their number one shutdown defenseman, isn't out there. But I don't think for a second that Paul Maurice thinks that this is a weak opponent and they can step on the jugular. I mean, there are a lot of guys on that team that can hurt you. Richie mentions Artemi Panarin, and he's a guy that I think has surprised a lot of people. He was a smaller guy that was really successful in the KHL, but he's really fit in nicely with Anisimov and Kane on that second line. And then they've got Tikhonov up there with Taves and Hossa on that third line, and he's big, and Richie mentioned he can throw the weight around, mm-hmm. and he can also score, even though he's struggled a little bit here early on. But this Chicago team, I think, is going to just get better and better as the year progresses. I agree with you, Rich, in the sense that I don't think they're as good as they were last year. And I think other teams in the West have caught up a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if Chicago gets upset in the playoffs. But I think that they're still a team that if they're bringing their quote-unquote A game,
sure,
they're almost unbeatable.
On the macro level, you make a very good point. But the Jets, the game tomorrow between the Jets and the Blackhawks is being played on the micro level.
And Crawford is coming in back-to-back shutouts.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's your big thing there. Yeah. You got a hot goalie.
You got Corey Crawford going to get the start for the Blackhawks tomorrow. The Jets have to be looking at it and say, look, for the entirety of the year, the Blackhawks are going to get their goal scoring and it's going to be fine.
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game tomorrow. Like, I think you're going to have a 4-3 game tomorrow just because of the skill on the ice and the speed.
Just because the Blackhawks,
they're going to exchange chances, I think. And I think that's great. If you're paying to go see the game or watching on TV or listening on the radio, that's great.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times is going to join us. More on the Chicago Blackhawks, the Jets opponent, tomorrow evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. In the evening, you're listening to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Chicago Sun-Times, Mark Lazarus. Mark, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Winnipeg.
Hey, I'll always love it here. This is the warmest it's ever been since I've been here.
Mark obviously brought you on to talk about the Blackhawks, and you know, if you would tell a hockey fan that the Blackhawks have not scored a goal in 139 minutes and 43 seconds, yet they are somehow 3-0 in that time period, they'd probably ask you to take a drug test. You know, I guess the first part of the question is, you know, why the goal scoring drying up in these last two games, and you know, did you imagine that, you know, they'd still be 2-0 without having scored a regulation time goal?
Well, the goal scoring has been a problem all season. This is basically a one-line team right now with the Artemi Panarin, Artem Anisimov, and Patrick Kane line has been doing basically all the lifting offensively all season. So it's been a struggle for much of since October started for them to score goals. But not even that line's not scoring, and Joel Quenneville was breaking them up at the end of the last game. There's no offense to be had, and they brought up Tanner Caro, who has been tearing it up in the AHL. They're looking for anything to spark this offense. But in the last three games since Duncan Keith went down, the focus has been more on team defense. I think you're seeing a lot of that, and that might play a small role in it, where guys are playing a little more conservatively. They're sagging back a little bit. They're helping out the defensemen. A lot of young defensemen on this blue line right now, especially with Keith out, a lot of major minutes being eaten up by young guys. And there's more of a concerted effort to worry about the defense than the offense. But obviously you can't succeed winning 1-0 in overtime every single night. So they have to fix this.
Mark, you mentioned Artemi Panarin, and Viktor Tikhonov is another player who's come over from the KHL and is playing in his first year for the Chicago Blackhawks. What have been your early impressions of those two Russians and how they fit into this new-look Blackhawks forward group?
Well, Panarin, I mean, he's everything he was advertised. They kept calling him the Russian Kane, and you never believe that that's actually going to be the case. But the guy comes in, and he looks phenomenal. He looks like a young Kane. He's got the floppy hair, and he's a small guy, but he can, you know, stick handle in a phone booth. He makes these jaw-dropping plays almost every night. Even when he's not scoring, he's creating. He's creating chances for himself and for his line mates, and he's really been fantastic. It's pretty impressive. He's going to be up there in that Rookie of the Year conversation, I think, even with the big names that were drafted with McDavid and Eichel and all these other guys. He's that good. Tikhonov is interesting. We all kind of looked at him as a throw-in. Like he was basically, you know, Panarin's chaperone almost, because he's just his friend and his interpreter. But here he is. He's skating on the top line with Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa. He's got the so-called lottery spot that Brandon Saad vacated when he was traded. And he looks good up there. He hasn't scored any points. That line hasn't really produced anything. But he's been effective up there. Marian Hossa likes him up there. And there's been a lot of chances, a lot of guys getting chances on that line that didn't stick. Teuvo Teravainen and Andrew Shaw. Marco Dano before he was sent down. Ryan Garbutt got a spin up there. Tikhonov seems to be sticking right now. He's the best option they have for that top wing, top left wing spot, and we didn't really anticipate that. We'll see if he can actually start scoring again, but he was a productive guy in K.
Mark, you look at the back end, and you know certainly over the course of the playoffs, the Hawks really cut down and played those top four guys, and you know rightfully so in terms of the talent. But you mentioned the Keith injury here, and you look at the over the course of the season, you can't cut down on minutes like that for your bottom pairing. Who has Joel Quenneville been trusting more than others on the bottom, say, three?
Well, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is the guy who has been elevated in the wake of the Keith injury. He only played 18 games last year because he had he broke his knee blocking a shot in November, and then he had a wrist injury just when he was ready to come back, and then he came out in the Stanley Cup final and he was playing. Joel Quenneville really trusts him for a young guy who's barely played. He really trusts him. He's getting 21, 22 minutes a night. He's getting penalty killing time now. He's the guy that's been elevated in this situation. David Runblad is the guy who's been into the lineup because of the injury. He is not a guy that Joel Quenneville trusts really very much. He's a good shot, but he's a liability in his own end a lot of the time. Victor Svedberg, a guy who kind of came out of nowhere in camp. He's been Brent Seabrook's regular partner since day one here this year, and he's looked pretty good. He's getting better and better. He's 6'9", obviously got a long reach. He can block some shots. It's a lot of new pieces here, and the defense is the big question. And this next month is huge without Duncan Keefe because the game against Anaheim was the Hawks' first against a Western Conference team, and now it's 14 of 16 are against the West. Keith is going to miss all of those. And you know how good the Central Division is, obviously. The Hawks don't want to find themselves looking up at five teams when this is all said and done. So this stretch without Duncan Keith is going to be a huge test for that blue line and for this team in general.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times discussing the Blackhawks ahead of their game tomorrow evening at MTS Center against the Jets. Mark, one of the other new additions that the Blackhawks made this offseason, a guy familiar to Winnipeggers, is Ryan Garbutt. He comes over from Dallas in the trade that sees Patrick Sharp, the main piece of that, go to Dallas. Of course, Trevor Daley also in that trade. Garbutt yet to get on the score sheet. How has he looked so far playing on that right side with Bickle and Tara Vinan lately?
He was maybe the Hawks' most effective player against Tampa Bay. He's another guy who kind of looked like a throw-in almost when the trade was made, and yet here he is playing major role. He's getting major penalty killing minutes. He's looking very good on the PK. He's getting he's on that third line with Tara Vinan and now Tanner Caro. Again, we're not seeing any offense, but we're not seeing any offense from almost anybody on this team right now. He's been around the net. He's got, I think, 18 shots on goal. That's more than anyone else outside the top six. So he's a guy who's making things happen. He's at least creating chances, which is all the Hawks can really ask for at this point. But his defensive ability and his penalty-killing ability has been a nice, pleasant surprise early on.
Mark, on this station a lot, there's been discussion about Joel Quenneville and whether he should be the head coach for Team Canada at the World Cup of Hockey. When you look at Joel Quenneville's track record, not just with Chicago, but going back to Colorado and St. Louis, the fact that he's one of the most winningest coaches of all time, do you think that he's almost underappreciated for how good of a coach he is? And what do you think makes him such a good coach?
I think absolutely he's underrated. I mean, this is a guy, I have to check my math on this. I think he has 18 seasons, and he's never had a losing record. That's even if you include overtime losses as regular losses. That's how successful this guy's going to be. He's going to pass Al Arbor this season. He's going to be the second winningest coach of all time. What makes him so effective is his system. He's the knock on him, if there's a knock, is that, well, he's got all this talent. Of course he's going to go out there and succeed with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Marian Hossa and Patrick Sharp, yada, yada, yada. I get that. But it's kind of like Phil Jackson in the NBA. You have to be able to manage that talent. You have to be able to make that talent subsume itself for the greater good of the team, and that's what he's always able to do. He's a player's coach, but he's also got a strict system. His system is very difficult to play. Antoine Vermette and Brad Richards came in last year, crafty veterans, and they couldn't handle it early on. It's a very defensive-minded system, but it's also these quick transition to offense. It's an intricate system that doesn't get a lot of credit for. He's also a player's coach. He hardly ever practices. I think in the last 9 days, the Hawks have had 4 days off. You just don't hear about that in the NHL. He's a guy who players want to play for. They want to succeed with him. And he gives them a system that they can succeed in. If you're the second winningest coach in NHL history, which he's going to be at the end of the season, he's won 3 cups in 6 years, I don't know what more the guy needs to prove.
Mark, if he's not having any practices, you must be enjoying covering the team too.
Yes, that is a fringe benefit of covering the Hawks. We have really long playoff runs and short summers,
yeah,
but we get more days off than your average guys.
More days off. You know, Mark, you talked about the defense and the trust in Trevor Van Riemsdyk. There wasn't a direct trade of Trevor Daley for Johnny Oduya, but in reality, many thought that he was there to take Oduya's spot, and of course Oduya goes to Dallas, so it all works out that way. How would you compare Daly in terms of what he brings to the table as opposed to Oduya, and is it an upgrade or a downgrade in your opinion?
It couldn't be any more different. I mean, they're polar opposites as players. Johnny Oduya was that stay-at-home, steady, reliable guy. You paired up with Nicklas Hjalmarsson, and that was your shutdown pairing. They were as good as anybody. Trevor Daly, I mean, you know, he's coming off one of the most interesting. His stats last year are fascinating. He was an offensive dynamo. He created so many goals and so many chances, yet he was the worst possession defenseman in the entire National Hockey League. It's an amazing thing that you could be that bad and that good at the same time. Early on here, he's struggling to kind of adapt to Quenneville's system because it's a lot different than what he saw in Dallas. Dallas was just go, 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 whereas in Chicago, obviously, it's a more defensive focus, but it's all those stretch passes, those quick, hard transition passes up the ice. And he's looking better and better. He looked not good those first couple of games. He's looked much better, and lately, I think he's starting to get it. He's starting to figure it out. It's way too early to say he's an upgrade or a downgrade. From a defensive standpoint, he's a clear downgrade from Oduya. From an offensive standpoint, he's a massive upgrade. So time will tell on him.
Mark Lazarus is our guest on NHL this week. He covers the Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, we haven't had an opportunity since he signed his new contract to talk to you about it. Brent Seabrook gets the big contract extension, 8 years, $55 million, 6.875 is the salary cap hit going forward. What were your thoughts on that contract extension that Seabrook signed?
I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, there was a lot of talk last year about who was going to be the one traded for cap purposes, and a lot of people threw Seabrook's name out there. There was no way they were ever going to trade Brent Seabrook. I mean, you know, Jonathan Toews is the captain of this team, but Brent Seabrook's at a beating heart. He's the leader in that room. He's the rah-rah guy. He's the guy that everybody wants to play alongside and everybody loves, and he is the engine that makes that team go emotionally and mentally. He's also a very good defenseman who's probably underrated because he's been overshadowed by Duncan Keith all these years. Now he's on a separate pairing from Keith, and he can kind of show his own thing. It's interesting. I mean, he's 30 years old, and he got an 8-year contract, basically. You look at what the Blackhawks are going to look like in 2021 or something like that. All these guys are still going to be here. How good are they going to be at 35, 36, 37, 38? That's going to be the question. It's a win-now mentality, and obviously that's how you have to approach it when you're winning the Cup every other year, basically. But you wonder how, with all the heavy miles these guys are logging and 100 games every single year because of these deep playoff runs, what they're going to look like when they're 37, 38 years old. The Hawks better hope the salary cap goes up a whole lot.
Mark, the Hawks are 6-3-0 right now. They've won 4 in a row, so they're doing pretty well. So the question might be a little bit inappropriate, but with the tumultuous offseason that the Blackhawks have had, has there been any carryover, or is that something that seems not to be a distraction right now?
I don't think it's a distraction. These guys have been through this before. After they won the Cup in 2010, they lost, I think it was like 11 guys. It was even worse than this year. After 2013, it wasn't that bad. They lost, you know, Boland and Frolik and a couple guys, but this one was it's a pretty good overhaul. I think it was 7 guys who played in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final aren't here anymore. You know, not just the Sharp, but you know, Oduya, but Versteeg and you know Vermette and Richards, Thiemann, and a lot of guys are not here anymore. I don't think there's a mental effect of that, but there's just an actual tangible. Well, we got new guys who don't know the system. We don't know where they fit, and there's a lot of tinkering that's going to go on here, but that's what Joel Quenneville does anyway every October, November. I remember last year around this time, Hawks fans were in an utter panic because Joel was changing the lines every period because he couldn't find out what he liked. And everyone's panicking, oh, they're going to miss the playoffs, yada, yada. And then you go on that circus trip in late November. They won 8 in a row, and everything clicked, and they went out and win the Cup. I mean, this is what Joel Quenneville does. He spends the first couple of months trying to figure out what's going to work, and then he sticks with it, usually, the rest of the way. There's a lot of moving parts in this lineup right now. This team is not as good as last year. Anyone who thinks otherwise is deluding themselves. They took a step back, and a lot of the Central took a step forward. This is going to be the most difficult regular season they've had in a few years. The regular season matters for them this year. Just games like tomorrow in Winnipeg matter. The Hawks have coasted in the regular season in the past. Patrick Kane admits it, that sometimes they just kind of go on autopilot for a little while, and they know they can't do that this year. So it's going to be interesting to see just how good they can be, because there are 6 teams that are playoff-caliber teams in the Central, and only 5 of them can make it.
Mark Lazarus covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, really appreciate your insight, and have a great evening in Winnipeg, and we'll see you tomorrow night at MTS Center.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Mark. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss Evander Kane and his inflammatory comments. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, we'll have it for you on illegalcurve.com. You can download the entire show by subscribing on iTunes. Of course, it'll also be available on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by our friends Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
You know, great interview with Mark Lazarus, and he was really echoing the sentiments of Richie that this team just isn't quite as good as last year's team, and that's why the regular season is really going to matter for this team, because even though Chicago won the cup last year and they've won three cups and you could say they're a dynasty, Drew, I wouldn't say they coasted, because if you remember last year, they struggled. It really wasn't until later on in the season that they really got it together. So I think when you're talking about tomorrow night's game, I mean, it's early on here, but teams, especially in the Central Division, just don't want to give up those points in division.
You're absolutely correct about that. There's an old saying, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And so, you know, I think the Winnipeg Jets organization would have been happy to have had that saying apply when they traded Evander Kane to the Buffalo Sabres. But Mr. Kane is back in the news, and here is one of the reasons why.
Like, who in the league would you want to drop the gloves with the most?
Ooh, probably Andrew Ladd or Blake Wheeler. That's probably who I'd like
your
to...
Your former teammate?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you'll get a chance this year now that you're in Buffalo, right?
That's probably your best answer you're going to get all day, too.
Sounds like a high-quality interview there.
Real deep, insightful questioning. But, you know, with Mr. Kane, he's back in the news. So seemingly just can't let sleeping dogs lie when it comes to his time in Winnipeg. That's his prerogative. Throwing a little bit more fuel on the fire. There was enough fuel on the fire just with the interview with Ken Campbell of the Hockey News. And then late yesterday, after, you know, you sort of think this is put to bed and everyone can focus on the Jets-Kings game, Barstool Sports comes out with this teaser of an interview that they conducted with him. I guess the whole interview will be released either later this week or next week. I'm not 100% sure. But, you know, the January 10th, that Sunday afternoon, there's going to be a heated atmosphere at MTS Center.
Guys, Evander Kane, exactly.
If either of those guys are playing.
Exactly. Richie, Evander Kane already had a bullseye on his back before this story came out, and now that bullseye is just bigger. And, you know, Evander Kane, you know, he can say whatever he wants. He can do whatever he does. But the reality is he finds himself injured again. He wasn't playing that well on a very bad Buffalo team. And again, it's all about Evander Kane off the ice, Rich. It's all about him creating storylines that have nothing to do with the quality of his play on the ice. Like, since Evander Kane scored 30 goals, Richie, for the Jets, what has he accomplished? Nothing. What's he accomplished? He gets injured every year. He underperforms. He makes himself not look very good, to put it lightly. And again, to me, it's someone who's more obsessed with his own celebrity than he is at becoming a great hockey player.
So why does anybody care? That's what I agree with all your points, Eddie. So why does anybody care? Like, why do Winnipeg fans care?
I think that's a fair point. I think that's a fair point. And I think a lot of them don't care as much as they used to, or when he was, you know, just after he was traded out of Winnipeg. I get the sense that a lot of people are saying, you know, we've moved on, buddy, you should move on too.
Well, that's what Andrew Ladd said, Drew. And to answer Richie's question, I think fans care because fans, and, you know, I'm a little bit different
this
because
is like breaking up with a girl and checking her Instagram and Facebook all the time, even though you broke up with her.
Yeah,
like,
but
that's not a bad analogy.
It's
a high first round draft pick who I think Jets fans feel did not reciprocate the love that they showed him.
Well, I think he would say they didn't show him any love.
That's not the case. I think when the Jets first came over from Atlanta, Evander Kane was...
I can't believe she took a helicopter to the Jays game. This is my thing. People care about these things.
And I think, again, Richie, I think the reason why is because of the fact that Kane was signed to a six-year deal and was such a huge part of the nucleus. And now that he's gone and he keeps throwing jabs at the Jets fans, I think they don't like it.
Well, I'll tell you what's slightly obnoxious. And I mean, look, if Evander Kane's, you know, the racism angle, if Evander Kane says he's subjected to racism, I have no idea if he is or isn't, so I'm not going to touch on that.
Yeah.
What I find a little bit obnoxious and a lot disingenuous is if he asks for a trade out of Winnipeg each and every summer, and he hated Winnipeg so much, and he's been pretty clear that he hated Winnipeg, don't sign a six-year contract here. Just don't. You know, either you're a man of principle or you're not a man of principle. And that shows me that he's a man of wanting the money and then wanting to bail out. That's the part that sticks in my craw more than anything else.
I find interesting another angle in terms of it's funny because it was viewed as, you know, being very able to get good value out of that deal. And the guy's not really providing much value now in terms of the injuries and the lack of performance. You know, Drew, I see your point. And these guys, though, if you get signed a long-term deal and the physicality of the game, I understand the principal angle of that, though. I can see your point. Again, though, I just don't know why anyone cares. I know Ken Campbell's going to get a lot of attention for the article. I just don't know why anybody cares what Evander Kane really has to say. Again, the racism angle, okay, do I think it was racially motivated by the fans as a whole? I don't think liked him in Winnipeg. I don't believe that. Are there small pockets where that might be the case? There may be. I don't know. But overall, I think the reason that the fans didn't like him was because of his attitude. And if you have that attitude, you better down perform at a really high level. And he didn't particularly do that after that first season there.
Forget about the fans aspect. I mean, the fans are, you know, they're the paying public, but forget about them. He was disliked by the locker room. I mean, you can't overlook that, that his teammates are the ones who drove him out of Winnipeg.
That's 100% what I believe to be the case. I mean, Kevin Chev, if he'd had this trade demand all these years, the only reason they traded him is because somebody hacked his tracksuit, apparently in the shower, whatever the heck the story was, and basically the players said, all right, enough's enough here.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Chev, I mean, he asked for a trade.
You don't have to trade a guy who asked for a trade, so I don't have an issue with that.
No.
Just what precipitated the trade itself.
Was the teammates saying, more, yeah. You know, this is like, you know, this is Keyshawn Johnson getting sent home, you know, from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers saying, we don't want, you're such a distraction, you go away, we don't want you anywhere near our team. And that's pretty, you know, it happened that Kane was injured at the same time, and it was a perfect storm for the Winnipeg Jets. The Buffalo Sabres were looking to be terrible, so they were willing to trade for a guy who was injured, and, you know, the Jets are happy to trade him away, but the players involved in the tracksuit incident and the leadership of this team forced the hand of the Winnipeg Jets management in saying get rid of him.
Allegedly,
fine. Jeff O'Neill, when this trade went down, Jeff O'Neill was on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and he said, you know, that people who had played with Evander Kane at the World Hockey Championships, other players, had said they'd never seen an act like Evander Kane's. At some point,
that was six years ago.
I've also heard, Drew, that he wasn't necessarily, like, he wouldn't get in people's faces and cause trouble as much as he just garnered
people the wrong way.
Well, yeah, not just garner attention that they didn't want, like, for example, this situation, although directly or indirectly causing this. The point is, it wasn't like you'd come up to somebody and cause problems. You would just, there'd be a scene surrounding him a lot of the time. So it was his inability to fit in the locker room, I think, in terms of with his teammates, with that chemistry. I think they probably just let him be, and he was on his own kind of thing in terms of his attitude.
Sure. There's some guys who've been in dressing rooms who've been bad guys. Sean Avery used to make fun of Dustin Brown's lisp. He's a bad guy.
That's what I mean. I don't think Kane was like that.
No, I don't think Evander Kane was.
From what I gather,
I don't think he was a bad guy. He wouldn't be rude to people, you know, outwardly mean to them. I just think that it was an oil and water situation.
That's probably, that's what I've heard that as well. You know, you heard many things, but again, why is he stirring up this much attention in Winnipeg? Obviously, we've dedicated a segment here to him, so he's getting some attention. We better not dedicate another one.
And I think the answer is
another one on January 10th, probably.
Well, that's fine. That has to do with playing on the ice, if he's playing.
The answer is simple. It's Evander Kane, and everybody loves a villain, right? Everybody wants to have a villain.
That's why Drew's here.
And I think in this case, Evander Kane has kind of become the Winnipeg Jets villain, in a sense, a guy who, you know, signed a six-year contract, was supposed to be here, wearing Bobby Hull's number. You know, he was supposed to be a big part of that young nucleus of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out, gets traded, and everybody kind of has a bit of resentment towards him. Look, you know, we talked about...
You got a good return for him.
Well, yeah, and that trade is looking better and better every day, right?
I think people, you know, when you're collectively calling a city to some degree racist, I think people don't like that. And then to come out
to me, that's just lazy journalism usually, Drew. I mean, if you're not going to get examples of stuff and...
Sure, you're not going
to... Go to the other side and get quotes and ask questions and all that stuff. You're looking for quotes. You're looking for the Twitterverse to go crazy and success, I guess. I guess that's the idea of success in this day and age in terms of journalism.
Sure, that's fine.
Ken Campbell has an extensive resume in terms of his journalistic past, but they've gone to the well here a few times with Evander Kane.
Sure.
It's much to do about nothing as far as I'm concerned.
The interesting part is his comments to Barstool Sports, which I think weren't made...
Is Barstool Sports?
It's a website that I don't really know. I can't speak to it. I've never visited it.